Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Today, oh God, today I'm standing in the streets of Moscow. Moscow, the USSR. No, not anymore. Moscow, Russia, formerly the USSR. Whoever would have thought years ago when we played Moscow Mailbag on Brain Damage that one day we'd be able to do a radio show directly from the streets. Well, it's not coming to you live. We're actually taping this on Sunday. The day before we embark on the Trans-Siberian Express. And when I say we, I mean me as well as the people standing around me. And with that, I'd like to introduce Hanukkah and Sasha, who have been on the radio program before from Stony Brook, but now are standing with me here in this great city of Moscow. Hanukkah, can you believe this day has finally come?
Oh yeah, I've been wanting to do this for years and I'm so excited. Tomorrow we're actually gonna get on a Trans-Siberian train. Wow.
So your last chance to back out.
I won't.
Sasha, how about you? How long have you wanted to do this?
Actually, it's not my idea, and I'm still in doubt if I really want to, and I'm just going along, and I'm loving it so far, but...
You still might get off at the first stop,
no,
right?
No, no, no.
Sasha is not looking forward to the prospect of having to sleep in beds he doesn't fit in.
Yeah, they are rather small, aren't they?
They are too short for him, and, well... Right now he has an opportunity to practice because the hotel beds are also too short for him. So we dragged out a mattress and put the bed upright against the wall. So we put our do not disturb sign on the door because we don't want to get in trouble with people from the hotel.
Amazing. Well, I've been traveling a lot since the last show I did. In fact, the last show we did was from What the Hack. We used the radio station over there to record a program. And it was a good thing, too, because the device that I was using to record radio programs on the iRiver, mine broke for no reason at all. Just all of a sudden said that its hard drive no longer existed and refused to do anything about it. Even after we opened it up and examined the thing, there was nothing we could do about it, which left me in a fine mess because there I was in the middle of Europe with no way to record the radio show. Well, we had 1 week where we were able to use the radio station that suddenly popped up in the middle of the camp field. Boy, that was lucky. So you might wonder how I'm doing this now. Well, guess what? Thanks to Redbird, who actually is probably in the radio station right now engineering this particular program, we have another iRiver. He lent us his old iRiver device, and we're recording the show that way. So hopefully this one will last a little bit longer and for the duration of the trip. Since the last time I was on, I've been to quite a few places, hung out in Amsterdam, only for one night, unfortunately. What did we do, Hanukkah? We wandered around, looked for coffee shops that weren't open, and went to a Turkish place, I think.
Yeah, we had dinner at a Turkish place, and, well, of course, some Americans wanted to go to a coffee shop, but the coffee shops tend to close rather early, because late at night, everybody's already completely spaced out and only wants to go and sleep. And so four Americans crashed on the floor of our living room, and it looked like a camping explosion had been taking place there. And then I think you got a chance to wash all your clothes, and then you had to get on the train already.
Yeah, we went down the block and found a place that would do our laundry. It was great. We just walked into a shop. The guy took our clothes and just said, come back in an hour. And that was it. There was no paper passing hands of any sort, no names being written down. He just remember what we looked like and trusted us when we came back. Actually, it was somebody completely different who gave me the clothes when I came back, but somehow he knew they were mine. So those kind of things just don't happen in the States, at least not very normally. Maybe in a small town they do. I mean, I can still walk into my bank and say I need money, and they just give me money, and that's it. You know, no ID, no forms, nothing. but that's rare. It's few and far between. It does happen occasionally. Yeah, those are the sounds of the streets of Moscow.
Yeah, that's actually a Russian police siren.
That's actually a car alarm, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know, in Stony Brook, it's rumored that there is a mockingbird that goes through all of these different intonations of sirens. Because mockingbirds, as you know, listen to the sounds of other birds and imitate them. They think a car alarm is a bird. But that's neither here nor there. Since I was in Amsterdam, I also traveled over to Berlin. So it's for, again, a single day. Warsaw for a couple of days, Minsk for a day and a half, Minsk in Belarus, and took the night train yesterday into Moscow. And boy, that was something else, having to get on a train in the middle of the night. And I was able to sleep on the train. That wasn't that big a deal. It was good training for the Trans-Siberian, which we're going to do a lot of sleeping on trains there. But I wanted to go actually later. I wanted to go the next day and spend two nights in Minsk. But have you guys ever tried to buy train tickets in any former Soviet republic?
No. But I can imagine. I suppose it involves a lot of shouting and not understanding English, right?
It was unbelievable. I thought it would be easy because I was staying in this nice westernized hotel in Minsk. Actually, it's called the Best Eastern. I'm not sure if that's supposed to be a joke or something, but that's what it's called. And the people there speak English, which is a rarity. All right. So I thought I was in good shape because I had those two things on my side. Western hotel, people speak English. Maybe I can actually get what I need done without having to wait on endless lines and be yelled at in Russian. So I asked them the next morning, would it be possible to get a reservation for the Saturday morning train to Moscow from Minsk? And, well, first of all, just so you understand, I had the ticket already. In fact, Hanneke, you helped get the ticket. There was a ticket all the way from Amsterdam to Moscow.
Yeah, I got a ticket from the Dutch railway company, and they could make reservations for Amsterdam to Berlin, Berlin to Warsaw, Warsaw to Minsk, but not for the part from Minsk to Moscow.
And I know why, because they had to deal with the people in Minsk, and that's impossible to do. So I went to the hotel front desk, and they hooked me up with this travel assistant guy who was very helpful. He actually told me that I didn't have to go all the way back to the train station. I could just walk down the street about five blocks, turn right at the McDonald's. Everything involves a McDonald's someplace because that's how you give directions. So he told me how to get there, about a 20-minute walk or so. And it was a ticket office that was not the train station. It was a nearby place, fairly nearby. He wrote a little note for me saying exactly what I needed and sent me on my way. I had misgivings from the start, but I figured, okay, you know, I'll give this a shot. So I walked all the way down to the ticket office, handed them the note. They looked at the note. They stared at the note. They glared at the note. They started shaking their head, and they started muttering. That always happens to me whenever I do anything in one of the former Soviet republics. There's always this muttering and shaking of heads, and then eventually they started yammering away at me in Russian. Something. I don't know what they were asking me, what they were saying. I just kept shaking my head saying, American, please have mercy. And so after a bunch of that, they simply wrote another note and told me to leave. Well, just pointed to the door, which I took to mean leave. Why does that kid have a rifle? The kid walking towards us, he has a rifle. Well, it looks pretty real to me. You'd never do that in the States. You can tell it's plastic from here. All right. Oh, he's waving it around rather carelessly, so I hope it's plastic. Careful where you point that thing, kid. All right. You see a lot of weird things here. You see soldiers walking around with what look like violin cases, but you know they're not. They actually have all kinds of weapons on them.
Or they should be a violin player dressed in full camo outfit.
Wouldn't that be a great thing on a band to have a violin player in full camouflage getup? That's an idea. Okay, so anyway, where was I? Yes, so I went all the way back to the hotel, showed the note to the guy. He said, oh, okay, well, what they're telling you here is that there is no train in the daytime. It's full. You have to take a nighttime train either tonight or tomorrow night. So I said, fine, okay, I'll take the nighttime train tonight. He wrote another note, sent me back on my way. I figured that would be the end of it. Same thing happened again. More yelling, more screaming, more pointing, and they wrote another note and sent me back. So at this point, I had had enough. I said, look, you know, I don't feel like passing all these notes around in Minsk. I want to walk around the city and take in the sights. Is there any way I could just hire somebody to go down there and buy the reservation for me? And it turned out the bellhop was more than happy to go down there and do that for me. He went all the way down to the train station. Inside of 50 minutes, he was back with my reservation. So there is a way to do it if you know how to get through all the yelling and screaming and pointing and note writing. But I don't think there's any hope for me.
You have to be local to do things like that.
Yeah, but you know, in New York, if you don't know the language, you can point to a list of numbers. And they will tell you, it's pretty clear, I think. It's pretty clear when the train leaves, when it arrives, where it goes from. And, you know, there are machines that you can use that are pretty simple and speak any language. And also in Poland, I had a lot of trouble. There you know, they speak the Polish language. They don't use the Cyrillic alphabet. But I could not find my train. The train from Warsaw to Minsk was an unlisted train. There was no way for me to get on that train based on the schedule. I had to ask all these people. And eventually, thanks to the Strawberry Youth Hostel people, they found the track of the train that was coming in that was actually the train that was going out as well, but wasn't listed anywhere. It's a challenge getting around here, but it's great. Sasha, you said that the city's changed a lot in the last couple of years since you were here last.
Yeah, there's a lot more newer stores and bigger stores have opened, especially on the road from the airport into town. Like last time around, it was 2001, I think we were here, and it was just one really big IKEA, and that's it. And now there's huge grocery stores there, and electronic shops, furniture stores, etc. And also the cars on the road change a bit, because it used to be BMWs and Mercedes and old Soviet cars, and now it's those and middle-class cars and Soviet cars. So there's just not the rich getting richer, but also the middle class actually starting to exist again, I think. And because for a long time, they were pretty non-existent.
Well, it's a pretty busy city, I'll say that. There's people everywhere, all kinds of commotion and activity, 24 hours a day, and that's the way any city should be, I think. In Minsk, it just seemed very empty. I mean, there were people there, but it just seemed very clean, very wide streets, not enough people, certainly no tourists, because it's such a pain to get into that country. It's equally a pain to get into this country. You have to get a visa and tell them where you're staying and hand over your passport whenever you go to a hotel and things like that. But once you're in here, it just seems a lot more cosmopolitan. It seems like, you know, there's so much more going on. So that's where we stand right now. Again, tomorrow, Monday, we leave on the Trans-Siberian. In fact, we're going to try to do off the hook from the Trans-Siberian on Wednesday. I don't know how successful that's going to be, because I'll probably have to use a satellite phone and have a view of the sky, and I don't know if that's really going to work out.
You're just going to have to stick your head out of the window.
Yeah,
for an hour.
I can try that, but I know there are dangers involved in sticking your head out windows of moving trains. But I guess we'll find out. It's a show about learning, after all. Okay, what we're going to try to do now, we have actually some people waiting for us in the middle of Red Square. Yeah, no kidding. We actually got some people in Moscow to wait for us there. And we're one metro stop away from Red Square. So what we're going to do, and this didn't work out too well in London, and I'm really hoping it works out better here. We're going to go down into the metro, and I have this big microphone again. This is going to be a little bit awkward. I'm going to try and keep it as natural looking as possible. I don't know how easy that's going to be. And we're going to take the metro one stop to Red Square and then walk to the middle of Red Square and find our friends and talk to them. Yes?
Well, the problem is we don't even look natural without a microphone. People are staring at us.
Well, people are staring at us. I guess they're just staring at us, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People do stare here a lot, don't they? And you know something else I've noticed? Walking. People walk in Moscow. They walk differently. If you're walking straight on the sidewalk, people think nothing of just walking directly in front of you at a perpendicular angle. I've collided with more people here than I think I've collided with in New York City in a year. And I've done that in one day.
It happened to me once a few years ago. I was standing in the middle of the Red Square, and it was almost empty. And there was this guy crossing the Red Square, and I was on his path. And he decided not to change his route, but just when he came to me, he just pushed me away with two hands and continued on his path.
And
well,
that kind of thing is normal.
Apparently, yeah, it seems to be a Russian thing.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of people, I guess, very determined in where they're going and how they're going to get there. Hopefully we'll be as determined. So let's see. What you're going to hear now is probably a bit of commotion as not only do we enter the metro, but I attempt to buy a ticket without being yelled at too severely by whoever is behind the gate. And I'm not going to do any talking into this microphone while I do this, because obviously I don't want it to seem as if I'm holding a microphone. Maybe it'll just look like I'm holding a microphone without using it, and maybe somehow that's better. And it can't look good, all these cables sticking out of me either, so I'm going to try and stick those in my pocket as much as possible. I'm just hoping that this doesn't cause any kind of static or interference or any other kind of noise like that. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to walk in there, buy a ticket, go down the huge escalators, and then get on the metro, which I must warn you is extremely loud. It's like New York City subways, only, I think, louder and very fast as well.
And very deep.
Very, very deep, yes. Okay, well, let's just go in, and I'll try and keep talking as much as I can without making it seem like I'm talking into this thing. Is that the entrance? This is the entrance. already have collided with somebody. And now we're inside. It's very windy for some reason. Get my ticket over here. One, please. I got some coins back. What kind of ticket is that? I said one, and I think I got something more than one. It said 26 on her thing. Can you read this, Sasha? What kind of ticket did I just get? I got two. I asked for one, and I got two. But that's about how I'm doing here. Are you sure that's one?
Just put it in the machine.
It's one ticket.
Find out.
Okay. Okay, the escalators. But for some reason, going down, you're on the left side. Going up, you're on the right side. It's kind of like England. All these stations are so nicely adorned with marble and lamps and statues and things like that.
And there's always a lady in a little glass booth sitting at the end of the escalator.
What purpose does she serve? Guard the escalator.
In case of unruly travelers, I think.
Or people with microphones.
Now this one is sleeping.
Now, if I don't use my card correctly, the thing... Oh, yeah, that's not good. I have to use the card properly. There we go. That's so bizarre. There's no gate at all unless you try to walk through it. And then the gate slams shut. Okay, now we have a whole second series of escalators. And this one is huge. Very fast moving, too. And this time we're going down on the right, and people are coming up on the left. So I guess it's all different sorts of systems they have at work here. Somebody else at the bottom of this escalator watching the escalator from a little cabin.
Over there is a sign that says stand on the right and walk on the left side of the escalator.
Of the escalator, of the one that you're actually in.
You'll be cursed at by the lady in the little glass booth.
Well, we don't want to be cursed at by her, do we?
No, although it might be good for your Russia.
Okay, we're on the actual subway platform now. Are we on it? Yes, we are. Let's make sure we go the right direction.
Yeah.
That would be good. This is the right direction?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good. Now, I found that I never have to wait very long for a subway here. Usually trains, no matter what time of the day or night, unless it's closed after 1 o'clock, no matter what time, there's always something within a minute or two.
Yeah, they tend to come every 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're very
really
fast.
Good is that they have a clock on every platform, not saying when the next one's coming, but how long the last one...
How long since the last one left?
Which is 1 minute, 19 seconds now.
Okay. How is that useful when it last left?
Well, it should be about 2 minutes, so...
I mean, I can generally tell by the faces of the people on the platform and how angry they are how long it's been since a train has been there.
But not exactly in seconds.
Not here in Moscow, everybody looks angry and grumpy.
Why is that? Why are people so crabby here?
I don't know. It's a cultural thing or something.
Okay, again, I should point out it's going to be very loud. And and difficult to hear. That's not our train, by the way. That's a train on the other platform. But it's going to be difficult to hear us on the actual train.
And
a train is coming. True to our word.
It took 2 minutes and 5 seconds.
A little bit later than usual. And these trains are so sturdy looking and big. very old too. I also like how the doors open before the train stops. So we take this one stop.
Yeah, one stop.
Okay.
You're leaning against the door. Oh. It says do not lean against the door.
Well, it says it in Russian, excuse me.
Yes, it does.
In America, I understand not to do that because it says it in English. Well, we've gotten a lot further than we did in London. It always feels like these things are going really, really fast.
I think they are.
They are going really, really fast, aren't they? Yeah. We were originally going to record the entire ride from the hotel to Red Square. Then we realized that might be a bit too much for the listeners, so we're just going to record one stop. And I think, you know, that will avoid most complaints anyway. But let me just tell you, it's loud, it's fast, it's hot too. They're not air conditioned.
Oh, there's always a little wind in the tunnels. That helps.
And the windows are open too. The windows are open to the subway, which adds a little air to the place.
Yes. Maybe you want to cut out a little bit of this noise after all.
Should I edit this?
I don't know.
You see, this program is almost always in real time. The only time we didn't air it in real time was when they told us to turn off the recorder in the London Underground.
Okay, that
so
makes sense.
We turned it off, but only for a few moments.
Well, then people will just have to listen to a lot of noise.
That's true. But, you know, it could be like being on the Moscow subway, the Moscow metro themselves.
Maybe we should be quiet for a few moments so people can enjoy the real Moscow subway feeling.
Okay, well, we'll be silent until we actually arrive at our stop, which I think is about now. Same guy does the recordings here then in New York. I just want to regroup here for a second so we can actually hear the doors close. They kind of slam shut. They don't go bing bong first. See, if you get in the way of that hurts.
Yeah, it sounds like it would hurt.
Right. Let's proceed outwards. I mentioned that it was very nicely decorated.
Yeah.
And there are statues everywhere. It's marble.
Well, they push you out that way.
Okay.
It says Murat.
So we're going the wrong way.
Exit.
Okay. Well, that could have been a disaster. We averted that disaster by changing our direction. And now we're heading towards some big escalators. And again, there's a woman at the bottom inside a little cage. Well, not cage, really. Just sort of a compartment, I guess.
Looks like a phone booth.
Yeah, I guess that's... And she has a phone. So it is a phone booth. And now we're on an ancient wooden escalator. And it goes up a really, really long way.
Thank you.
escalator ride is as long as the subway ride. I was just mentioning how these escalator rides seem to be as long as the actual train rides.
Yeah,
I've seen people coming down the escalator reading hardcover books.
Yes, yeah. But it is something Russian too, I think. People reading everywhere. And during communism, people used to read a lot more because everybody was reading Pushkin and Tolstoy. Because books were very cheap, but now people are mostly reading magazines from the West, of course.
I should point out Hanneke is a native of Holland. Might sound like she's from here since she knows so much about the place and can actually understand what the signs say and various other things like that.
Well, I can read the alphabet and I can speak a few words, but when I start speaking to somebody, I just don't understand what they're saying back to me.
That's how I feel back home. But we get on with our lives. Okay, we're going outside now, and I guess I can stop being in surreptitious mode. We actually succeeded. We got through the metro. And here we are outside. Now we must find our friends in Red Square. Hopefully that's
we must find
somewhere.
Red Square.
We must find Red Square first. Well, I think many people have found Red Square, so it shouldn't be too difficult. It's a big square, right? And it's red? We're totally lost. This is embarrassing. If we see Lenin's corpse or something, that's a clue, right? It's around here.
It's mostly the enclosure around him, I think.
Okay.
I have a map.
You have a map, yes,
yeah.
Okay. But does that map have any bearing on where we are now?
Well,
does that sign?
Name of the station we got out. I just cannot find that station. Oh, here.
We are here, Площадь Революции, and where's the Red Square?
The big square there.
Now, I am a disaster at reading maps. Sasha's going to give it a try.
Okay. Lost on the Air. That's a good name for a show, isn't it?
I'm going to take my camera and make a picture of this really nice church.
Well,
okay. I'm all for going in that direction.
That direction. Okay, we're going to have to keep moving because cameras on radio don't really work. And hopefully Red Square will show itself to us and our friends in the middle of Red Square,
that's the idea.
Who hopefully aren't too angry with us for taking so long to get to them. How are we doing on time, by the way, Sasha?
I think we're halfway almost.
Halfway. Yeah. Actually, I have no conception.
I've got a stopwatch cell phone now, so.
Okay. No conception of the time that's passing by. I'm just sort of doing this all in real time. But for those just tuning in, we are in Moscow this week, walking around right now on the streets. We just got off the metro, and we're heading towards Red Square. Hanneke has caught up to us.
Yes, that was the sound of me catching up.
Yes, and you take your picture, okay?
Yes, I did.
Good. All right, we're coming to a clearing of sorts. All the buildings here are very majestic and big. So I would assume that means Red Square must be around someplace. So let's talk about our trip a little bit. We leave tomorrow, and how long do we stay on the train for before we get off someplace?
We stay on the train for one night, and then we make a stop at Yekaterinburg, place formerly called Sverdlovsk. And it's also, there used to be, like in the 1970s, there was a big accident with anthrax being released accidentally from a biological weapons plant. That's
just past a cop. Was that a cop? Or?
Yeah,
okay.
That was a cop.
You can't tell because the soldiers and the cops have the same hats. These big, fat, wide hats, you know?
This guy was clad in blue.
He was clad, but what does that mean? Maybe he's a security guard?
Well, blue is usually cop and green is army, I would say.
Was he packing? Did he have a gun?
I don't know. I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we still look a little lost here. Boy, this is embarrassing, not being able to find Red Square at the Red Square train station.
It's not the Red Square train station. Red Square doesn't have a train station.
Well, maybe that's the problem.
We got out at Revolution Square train station. And it should be close.
Okay, well, I think we might have to ask somebody. Normally, I don't like to ask directions, but when I'm doing a radio show and, you know, part of the radio show involves being in a certain place, I might make an exception. Now, one of these signs might say Red Square, right? We'd never know. They don't?
I don't. If you'd learned the Cyrillic alphabet, you'd know.
Well, yeah, I guess I should regret not knowing that, but one thing I do know is that we are lost. Is that, that's Red Square, isn't it? It looks kind of big. Looks kind of red. Okay. We're definitely moving towards something.
Did you ask?
I think that's Red Square up ahead.
Yeah,
see that big plaza?
All right.
Yeah. All right, so we get off at that city that I can't possibly pronounce. And how long are we there for?
We're going to be 2 nights in Yekaterinburg. Then we get on the train. We're 3 days and 2 nights on the train. We get off in Irkutsk, which is Siberia. And it's next to the Baikal Lake, which is well known for special kinds of fish and like sea, how do you call them, seal type of animals, especially for that part of the world. And then we take our train goes south until Irkutsk. It's actually Trans-Siberia Express, and then we go south and go Trans-Mongolia.
So we wind up in Mongolia.
Yes, and we make a stop in Ulaanbaatar, the capital of Mongolia.
Those are some passing Russians. Nothing to be alarmed about. It happens quite a bit, actually. So Ulaanbaatar, and I think we're going to be riding jeeps around in the Gobi Desert, is that correct?
No, we're going to go to a nature reserve called Hustai, and they have Przewalski horses there.
So we're not riding jeeps?
We might ride a jeep or a little minibus. A 4x4 Russian minibus.
Okay, that sounds like fun too.
Oh yeah.
Maybe a camel?
Who knows? Maybe a Przewalski horse. No, I don't think so. They're too small.
Well, Mongolia is going to be a very interesting place to see.
Yes,
very
definitely.
Strange country. And after that, we're heading to Beijing. Now, at that point, you're going to find out something rather interesting.
Yep.
Whether or not you're allowed into North Korea.
Indeed. We have prepared everything for a trip to North Korea, but it will be interesting until the last day before we get there, because then we have to go to the North Korean embassy in Beijing and to personally pick up our visa. And so that will be the moment when they decide if they're going to let us in or not.
So you have to go all the way to Beijing to find out if you can be let into North Korea.
Yes, indeed.
Fascinating.
Isn't that interesting?
Now I see a gate here. I'm not sure if this means that I'm going to put the microphone down so it doesn't look too obvious. You know, it was closed last time I was here too, but I see people in the middle, and those might be our friends. You want to try and ask what's going on here?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to see if Red Square is in fact closed again.
Police officer says it's closed.
Okay, I just got an SMS from our friend saying Red Square is closed. We are near the gates. Now, the thing is, there must be gates everywhere, so I don't know which gates he means. So I guess what we should probably do is just try and walk around Red Square and find all the gates until we find him.
Well, we could do that, or we could ask him the name of the street. Or is that too practical?
If you can do it, if you can SMS the street. There's the famous bells. I just want to hear these for a second. Okay, well, of course, they stopped as soon as I started listening. But for people who listened to Radio Moscow way back, those bells were commonly played on the radio. And I just heard them in person. So it's very hard for me to type SMS messages and be on the air at the same time. And it's especially hard for me to type Russian names. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hand you the phone after I get out of predictive text mode, and hopefully you can send a message back and have them meet us where we are. Predictive text off. Okay, go crazy. While Sasha is typing a message to our friends, which hopefully they'll get here before the show ends, what are your impressions of modern-day Moscow this time around, Hanukkah?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question. We've only been here for 1.5 days. It's rather quiet now for Moscow standards because it's summer and everybody is at their dacha. Russians tend to have like this little cottage somewhere. Even the ones who are not very rich have dachas. And so in the summer, people like to get out of the city as much as possible. So that's the reason that it was actually okay to ride in the subway and not totally crowded and no arms and legs sticking out of the window, so to speak.
Seemed pretty crowded to me. In fact, every time I've ridden the subway, it seemed pretty crowded.
I didn't think it was too crowded.
I guess there's always room for more.
Of course. And we were here in 2001, so 4 years ago. And then we noticed the cars on the street. You only saw really old cars, Soviet style, like Ladas and stuff. And some very new, shiny Mercedeses and BMWs. And the people driving the new cars and the expensive cars, they didn't care about any traffic regulations whatsoever. We saw one guy who parked his big Mercedes on the middle of an intersection. And he was arguing with a cop. The cop said, "Hey, you can park there." And the guy goes, "Yeah, well, of course I can. Look, everybody's driving around me. It's not a problem." So that was pretty funny. And now there seems to be more of a middle class, at least car-wise.
Yeah. Did I tell you about my cab ride over here from the train station? It was a life-altering experience. Basically, I didn't want to take the metro with my bag, so I just hired a cab to take me over to the hotel, which turned out to be quite a distance away. And my God, the way this guy drove was simply staggering. I mean, it puts New York City cab drivers to shame. We hit 120 kilometers an hour, which I think is, what is that, about 80 miles an hour?
And that's about 80.
That's in the streets, of Moscow. And he wasn't the only one doing this. All kinds of people were driving that fast and just narrowly missing each other, making hairpin turns onto side streets, somehow making all the traffic lights. And, you know, it was scary. It really was pretty scary, but also thrilling at the same time. It was like an amusement park ride. And my hat's off, literally, because my hat blew off inside the car. But my hat's off to these guys who are able to do this. I imagine it doesn't always turn out well, but it did in my case, so I was just very impressed. All right, we sent the SMS to our friends. How much time do we have before we see if they actually get there in time?
We're 37 minutes.
37 minutes into the show, so hopefully that corresponds to the clock back in the United States. If it's 37 minutes past the hour, then the show has started on time. Well, what were your opinions, as long as we're here, on what the heck? How do you think it all turned out in the end?
I thought it was absolutely great. The atmosphere was so nice. And a large part was to thank to the Germans who did the decorations of the field and the lighting of the trees. And it was absolutely amazing, especially at night. It was beautiful. And the organization of What the Heck rented some nice tents. They used to have like the plain white tents, and now they were like yellow
like
and blue,
yeah,
striped circus tents. It was also very good for the atmosphere. And there was this construction, a bunch of metal poles with a lot of hammocks in between, and people were just lying in a hammock typing away on their laptop and being very relaxed. And you saw all the journalists who came to take pictures. Everybody took a picture of the hammock, of course. And they appeared large in the newspapers.
Yeah, the hammocks were great. The hammocks were a very relaxing part of the whole experience. We've done this now how many times? Are we counting Galactic Hacker Party as one of the events?
I would say so. In 89, the Galactic Hacker Party. Then in 93, Hacking at the End of the Universe. In 97, HIP, Hacking in Progress. In 2001, HELL, Hackers at Large. And now What the Heck? In 2005. So it's actually the fifth event in Holland.
And hopefully there'll be a sixth one in 2009. No name yet picked out for that?
Yes, that would be great. Although the organization mentioned at a closing speech that maybe it's not going to be in Holland, maybe it could just be over the border in Germany, because Holland is so regulated that it drives everybody crazy who wants to organize something.
Now, that's something I can't put my head around this. How did Holland turn into a bureaucratic state. It seemed to be so open and free over the years. Have things really changed that much?
Well, people want to.
We looked the other way and it just happened now. Holland may seem open and free on certain subjects, as like the semi-legalization of marijuana and stuff, but there's actually a lot of things that Holland is very bureaucratic.
I personally hope it stays in Holland, only because I know it's only a border. I know it's artificial as far as that goes, but I still think there's a unique personality to the Dutch culture, and I would hope that rather than simply go across the border where things are easier, that people fight and try to change things in the next 4 years so that it's not so difficult.
Well, I think the problem is mostly that what Rob also said at the conference itself, there have been a couple of major accidents in Holland, and those kind of made the governments go like, oh damn, we screwed up and we need to have more rules to make sure we don't screw up again. So yet, like for the tents at the camp, if a tent could house more than 20 people, it had to have an evacuation plan. Even if you had like all the sides open, you still had to have an evacuation plan, and this is actually checked by the fire department. So it's kind of weird. It's like raining a lot and you're there on a field in a tent with a fire extinguisher for, well, maybe all hell breaks loose and there'll be fire. And that's just annoying that they can close your entire event down because like one fire extinguisher missing, or you're making noise 5 minutes after 3 a.m., which is a noise curfew, and there's so many of these rules. And
you see, part of the reason why it's easier in Germany is because of the Chaos Computer Club and the political clout that they have over there. They're able to reverse bad legislation very easily. They're able to really have an impact in what's going on. And I think if we had more of that in different countries, if there was such an organization in Holland, if there's such an organization in the UK, in the United States, then we wouldn't have to escape to other countries to have our events. We could actually do them where we live, and we could have more of them in more countries. And I, you know, you have to understand that, yeah, moving it to Germany might be a solution in one regard, but it's going to be harder for some people to get to another country for whatever reason. I saw two people taking off a train going from Holland to Germany.
Yep.
Because border guards came on, even though it's part of the EU, border guards came on, found something wrong, and took them off the train.
After the incidents in London and Madrid now, and there was actually a news item, I think, last week about people traveling from, a reporter borrowed a passport and borrowed a train ticket in somebody else's name, and took the Eurostar from London to Paris.
It wasn't just somebody else's name. He was traveling on the name of one of the suspects of the, actually one of the guys they caught,
it's,
I think, for the London bombings.
And well, he arrived in Paris and nobody noticed that his passport was not his picture, etc. But it's kind of weird that they check in the first place, because officially they're not supposed to check.
Well, they're checking,
yeah, checking,
and that makes it a little bit more difficult. That's why I think, you know, if all the countries that have strong hacker presence, if they also had some political clout, if they were able to keep the regulation from killing the event, if they're able to keep bad legislation from becoming the norm, we might have a chance.
I think it'll go in cycles. There's like this idea that, oh, everything is way too loose, everybody's doing what they want to do, and we can't have that, we have to have rules. And in a couple of years, there's too many rules, we can't live like this, well, we need less rules, and things like that always go in cycles, I think, and things, yeah.
Yeah, one other idea would be for the Dutch hacker community to organize themselves and also build an organization, because the Chaos Computer Club in Germany, I think they exist for about 24 years now, and so they have a long history and they have like proven their good intent, and that's how they have become recognized as a major party. And well, in Holland we have no real organization, so it's just a bunch of people hanging around knowing each other who organize these events. But maybe if there would be an organization that could be like a partner to talk with for the government, it might help a little bit.
I think it's also a very Dutch thing to not want to be organized and just hang out together and organize a festival together, and that's it. You don't need like to have an official entity and be this and this group. And that's part of the being an individual-based society, is that you don't have to start a group to do something. Just a couple of people tag along and do something. And yeah, now that's kind of working against us, I think, in the end. But
if you compare the Dutch to the Germans, we always think that the Germans are so serious and not about fun, and are also very political and principle and moral. And the Germans say, oh yeah, you Dutch, you're also so much about fun and stuff. That's so cool. So it might also be a cultural difference.
All right. I wish our friend from Moscow was here so we could talk about the hacker culture in Russia. Have you heard back from him?
The name of the street I SMS'd him doesn't sound familiar to him, and I.
You see what I mean? You see what I mean?
SMS'd a new description of where we were.
So well, what I'd like to do. How are we on time?
We're 46 minutes in now.
Since we only have less than 10 minutes, really, I'm going to do something unprecedented and stop the show. Yeah, the show can be stopped. I don't like to stop the show, but I do want to talk to our friends from Russia, and it would be silly not to talk to them simply because they couldn't get to a street that we can't pronounce.
During our talk here, Red Square has actually opened now.
Oh, Red Square has now been opened?
Yep.
All right, you know, I'm going to stop the show, and we're going to move to the middle of Red Square, and the next thing you hear will be us talking from Red Square. Thank you. Hello there. We're here in Red Square, as promised. And we've met our friends. Ilya is here from Moscow. We hung out once before 2 years ago. It's good to see you again.
Hello, Manel.
And now you have a very unique part in the hacker world in Russia. You actually teach computer hacking.
Yes, that's Russian know-how. You know, in America, I have told and read in books that people are put into prison for hacking. So in Russia, we tried a different way, an ethical hacking, taking computer science from United States and the art of school building, like Zen schools, like Karate Do schools, from China, from Japan.
And you've actually set up a hacker house?
Yes, we have the first center of hackers culture in the world. So it is a private house. People can come and can study hacking art. And so long as we don't break the local law, police never bothers of our abilities.
Mm-hmm. And how many hackers do you think there are in the former Soviet Union, in Russia, and Moscow?
Our part of hacking movements is the most organized and the most ethical. But since mass media became blame hackers on every computer crime that happens here, there were many hackers that turned to the evil side or gray area. So it's impossible to count everyone.
It sounds like you have the same media we have. They demonize hackers for anything that goes wrong.
Journalists try to import this hackers' hysteria from United States and from abroad. But for Russia, it is not natural. In Russia, we had a period where people who are fond of computers were put into prison. But this period is in the past. During Stalin times in the 30s, it was told that people who study computers, who their brain damaged, and those people are working for capitalist system.
Wow. Well, you know, that might not be so far from the truth as far as what people spend endless hours playing with computers are defined as. But what kind of people do you see now? Do you see a lot of young people that are interested? Do you see a lot of older people?
Now here came internet, and people are really obsessed by new technologies, by communicating with each other. You know that a few time ago, it was impossible even to access computers. There were very few computers in Moscow, and all we used is to learn how their computers, how to program computers, what is computer programs. Then came FidoNet, and we became know that not only in Moscow people are fond of computers, in other towns also. And now when internet connected, the hackers community begin to communicate with the whole world through internet.
Now, you still use FidoNet quite a lot in Russia.
FidoNet is freedom from money, freedom from centralized communications. Also, the technology to connect FidoNet and internet. So many hackers go to FidoNet through website, through web interface, and communicate with people who are fond of computers but have no money for internet, have no connectivity, internet connectivity.
So I guess a lot of people are quite fond of using it in that way.
Yes, but another thing that damaged hackers community here is commercial. In 80s, people who were fond of computers, we studied, we played, and learned different computer languages, learned different computer architectures, and it was very fun. And now, if a hacker learns something, he can take a job and spend all his time by earning money. And for many, it is not so much fun.
Do you have conferences here, hacker conferences?
We have very strong tradition of demo scene, demo conference. Demo makers, they come, then show a demo, then organized contests. And also we have a Sprig tradition from 1993. It is for hackers of all scenes. So people who write viruses, people who catch viruses, people who crack and defend computer sites, people who are fond of free software movement. We come together and know what our neighbors do in Computer Underground.
Do you have much contact with people in other countries?
In the internet. Most of hackers in Russia know English language, at least to read documentation or to write computer programs, because every computer language use English language. So some contacts for sure.
What would you like to see change in the next 5 or so years?
In Russia or in the world?
Well, both actually.
I want to build centers of hackers culture in many towns and all countries, so that people who really want to study computer networks, self-defense, they can learn it and learn it in legal ways. I think that in study hackers there is no illegal, no more than to study karate do.
Is there a way people can contact you from all over the world?
Through internet, I'm available on LiveJournal.
LiveJournal? Yeah. Tell us how to reach you on LiveJournal.
My nickname is Arvi, on A-R-V-I. I write mostly Russian, but I understand English, and if something interesting, I answer English too.
All right, Ilya, you've been a tremendous inspiration to a lot of people, and I know a lot of people here look up to you. And hopefully one day we'll be coming to conferences here, and you'll be coming to conferences in New York, and we'll be able to share all kinds of information. I understand now, though, you've picked out a song for us. You want to tell us something about this particular song?
Yes, this particular song is the song where my students learned to program in 1996.
Hi. Turn off? Sorry. All right, that was really kind of weird. We were just talking in Red Square, and this guy just came up to us really suddenly and silently, wearing a pair of sunglasses and accompanied by a cop. And I didn't know if he was a friend of Ilya's or what. He just kind of stared intently at us, and I had to ask, do you want us to turn this off? And apparently that's what he wanted us to do. Hanukkah, he saw this. It was kind of weird, wasn't it?
Well, I wasn't really looking around me because the sun was in my eyes, and suddenly in my view comes this hand, somebody sticking out this hand in a motion of stop. And well, he didn't say anything, so we could not record him, but it was very clear what he meant.
It was kind of frightening. I guess, you know, a throwback to the days when people really were stopped from recording or documenting in any way. Ilya, were you surprised by that? By happening a couple of moments ago?
Oh, we get used to this surprise in Russia.
You know, and I was about to say, you know, we haven't had any hassle whatsoever. We recorded in the metro, we went all through the streets, we're in Red Square recording, and, you know, literally, and off the wall style, with a minute to go, we get stopped.
They told that we must have special papers to record in ourselves on the Red Square, but they refused to tell how we can get these papers.
Ah, yes, the old bureaucracy. And what's funny is, you know, there are people recording with all manners of devices, video and cameras and things like that. And the only reason that we got stopped was because of this stupid microphone I have to hold in my hand. And the only reason I have to do that is because the other microphone isn't working properly, the clip-on one. So, that's hold a microphone in your hand, folks, if you want attention. That's how you're going to get it. Ilya, we're just about out of time. You were about to discuss, before we were so rudely interrupted, the song that we're about to play. Tell us something about this.
So one of my students put this song, and we heard it when my students learned how to program. This is a very extremist song, and it is about killing Yankee. But in this song...
Killing who?
Killing Yankee. This song explained that many American underground people are not Yankee. And Yankee is not racism. This is this political system that now try to change all the world into itself, like a computer virus.
Now, you said that this guy is afraid to perform this song anymore.
He denied this song, so now it is illegal. This song is illegal in all senses of it.
Okay, well, here we go again, playing something else illegal on Off the Wall. It's Emmanuel Goldstein. It's been fun. It's been an experience. And next week, Hanukkah, where are we going to be next week?
Maybe in Irkutsk. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, check the log. We're keeping a travel log, www.2600.com/travel. And next week, not sure where we're going to be. On Off the Hook tomorrow, we're going to try and do a live show directly from the Trans-Siberian Express. And now, Ilya... Who is this once again, and what's the name of the song?
Непомнящий, and the name is Убей Янки.
Okay. Have a good night, everyone.
Yeah.